Okay, welcome to the official first podcast.
Official.
Yeah. Last week was a little test run. This is probably a little test run too. It's so official, we don't even have a name yet for it. So we just got to keep it going, keep it moving while everything's still fresh, especially the topic, which is the new Halloween 2018. We're here with Brandon Siglock.
What's up, everyone?
And Dominique Marcel.
What's up, everybody?
And last week we couldn't really discuss it because I hadn't seen it yet. And since then,
yeah,
I've seen it twice.
Mike, you saw it twice. Is that how much you liked it?
No.
Okay.
As you can see, I'm a
aficionado.
I think especially the earlier ones. So for this one, you know, when I went in the first time, I was extremely, extremely let down. I will say this: I can appreciate the time and effort it takes to make a film. So. You know, I'm not going to...
As a filmmaker yourself, I appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to knock them for their efforts. But for me, what was presented to me and my feeling on it, I was extremely let down by it. So I wanted to see it again to give it just a fair...
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's what you always want to try to do with,
with
certain films, mm-hmm. especially you're not quite sure.
Right. And you know, and I will buy the Blu-ray and I'll study absolutely. It. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll study it and how they did
it. It's a part of the collection now. Like,
yeah.
It's, yeah. We all... We have Resurrection in the collection.
Yeah.
So it's definitely going in the collection.
So let me start with Dominique. Talk to me.
I think I should get out the positives because there's very little positive
Let's do that.
That I felt about Let's do this that. Film. To me, the positive, the one thing that just when I reviewed this for my channel, the one thing that I had to admit and. And talking about this film, it's still a moment that just gets me like giddy and like wide eyed, like, oh, Michael, you SOB, you.
Right.
It's that very first kill when he kills the kid. I thought that was going to set the tone for this movie. And I was like, oh, they starting off with their balls out. I was like, wow. And it was unnecessary because if you watch the sequence of the scene, he don't necessarily need to kill the kid, and you kind of to this day I don't remember what happened to his dad, this older dude who ended up being his dad. I didn't get the casting of that. It's like the guy's a little too old to be his dad. I thought it was his
sure.
granddad, but yeah, the fact that he killed him and like in a kind of brutal way too, I was like, Michael, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
So yeah, I that is really the only positive of the movie that I really cared for.
Okay.
For me, it was this movie was pretty frustrating, but what I did like the look of Michael for the kind of film this was going for. I was trying to stick to the Carpenter style, but realistically in a horror movie these days, especially with slashers, you have to give some kills in here. And I think the best kill, honestly, for me was the kid because it shows, wait, are they really taking this, you know, dark, this is going dark. But obviously, we know what happens from there on. Also, some of the positive, Jamie Lee Curtis, she was badass. I feel like they didn't give her enough to do for her character-wise, like how they did in H2O. But I think they gave her enough badassery here to make up for the resurrection role. So those are some of my positives for the film.
Yeah, I mean, I did... my eyes actually watered up at one point looking at... Yeah, I mean, like I said, there are some positives. My eyes did water up at one point looking at... looking at her face and you can tell the travels in her face. Mm-hmm. And I just thought back to the teen Jamie Lee to have to go through all that. And then the family's, you know, kind of shitting on her a little bit. She's just trying to keep them safe and it could be frustrating for them as well. So that did pull a little emotion out of me. Now,
cause you were thinking about that Laurie from 78.
Yeah. Sure.
Having lived that life.
Sure.
I feel
sure.
You.
Absolutely. Like yeah. And the isolation that she's in now. So that got me, you know, like I said, there are some positives. Now let's talk about Michael. He looked ferocious. I thought the mask was great. But.
Will you be adding that mask in your collection here?
I do have it. It's out. Okay. It's out. I had to lend it out, but it's here. If you're asking me, if you're telling me that this is the same Michael from 40 years previous, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you can't give me a Michael that's half a foot taller and wider. Now, I do understand every Michael's different in every sequel, but...
They're making a point about this.
Right. You're making a point, right? You're saying, forget the sequels, okay?
Yep.
I'm forgetting them, right? I'm trying to. So you give me a guy who, like I said, is ferocious and he did his job, but... he didn't move like my Michael.
Yeah.
He was.
Let me ask you, Mike. Because they're toting the notion that this is the same Michael from 78, and they were kind of also alluding that you're getting the same stunt actor who playing Michael. Is that the case in this movie? Are we getting the same stunt actor?
Well, you're getting Nick Castle in, I think, the mirror scene. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. And the head tilts, and he ADR'd the breathing, which is cool, which is very nostalgic.
Wait, yeah. So you're telling me what?
James Jude Courtney
was the Michael Myers.
Right.
Yeah.
That's disappointing to find out.
Well, because...
out.
The guy you see with no mask in the beginning, that's not Nick Castle.
That's
not Nick Castle. He did his job, yeah. You know? I mean, he did for what they wanted, and I think that's a directing choice, obviously. But again, for me, the guy's half a foot taller. He's wider. He moves different.
Yeah.
And I have a problem with that.
Yeah, you would think as a director and when you're casting, you would go for the same size, try to find someone around what Nick Castle, you know, did. Maybe that it was hard to find or no one around that, you know, size you could do that. But again, like you said, it's not in a way the same Michael because he moves differently. And he, again, getting back to it, he's a little more brutal in here compared to 78. But to be fair, that was 78 and this is 2018. So you kind of have to do that away. But again, it is in a way different Michael. And I feel like a lot of people are not noticing that. They're just trying to, from everyone who's seen this movie, pretty much loves it from what everyone's saying they pull it off. And I'm like, well, if you did really love the original Halloween, you would notice these things with the Michael Myers size and how he's, you know, doesn't move in a certain way. But I mean, I guess you do kind of, I guess it's a way for them to, you know, like they haven't seen as good of a Halloween movie since then. And maybe this is, you know, just a way for them just to, they can ignore that fact. So,
yeah.
The sequence in the first act when he had his mask off or he hadn't gotten the mask back, that was actually another interesting part of it for me because it was weird to think that these two people, the journalists who got killed, that they were actually killed by Michael Myers, but by a Michael Myers who didn't have his mask on. So they actually got a look at what he looks like, whereas we, the audience, never got a full look of his face. So, I mean, to think about being in the story is like, wow, these people got to see his face, but they got killed. Unfortunately, they didn't get to tell it, you know, describe it or anything like that. So for the film itself, I thought that moment was kind of interesting, but it's very disappointing to hear that half a face or that profile you do see is not the actual original stunt actor. Now, I kind of understand why they wouldn't choose him like 100% of the movie because that stunt actor having, of course, aged in life, you can't have him like pick up people or do some of the things a stunt actor is supposed to do. So I understand maybe, why Michael has the mask on to change it with a young stunt actor. But you would think that for the majority of Michael's scenes that they would use Nick Castle if they're using this whole 40 years later, we got Jamie Lee Curtis back. You would think that they would bring him back for the majority of that part as well. But
or somebody comparable to his size. Obviously, he has aged.
Yeah,
exactly.
I felt they showed his face far too much in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see him driving, you see the back of his gray hair, or his back of his head with his gray hair, his hairline. It's too much personification for me. He's blatantly driving at the gas station.
And if you kind of think about it, a person like they shave him. I mean, because he would be all kind of wily, right?
Well, you would think, right?
Yeah, but he was kind of clean cut for it. You know, it's like. Does anybody else have any positives? Because I'm ready to deep dive into the negatives.
Some of the Steadicam movement was good from a filmmaking standpoint, I guess. Some of the shots and lighting were good. But as far as story-wise, Dom, outside of Jamie Lee, I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now.
I'll go on to one of my favorite shots in the movie is where the bus crash happens and the son and the father... are in the truck and the father gets out and with the way the lights are showing everything. I love that shot. That's one of my probably favorite things that in a horror movie can do like that. It really feels like it's a true horror film in that way. And
I like that moment of the bus crash and everything like that because taking that moment out of this movie, a kid with a big rifle in his hand, and he obviously has used the rifle before. You can definitely tell that he was experienced with it, but still, as a kid, he's scared about what's going on. You know, these crazy, you know, guys, you know, walking out this bus. So I thought that was a suspenseful moment with it kind of ruined with what happens, out of the blue. But okay, well, I'm acting like I don't want to spoil it, but with they kind of ruined that moment by having him shoot the doctor just out of the blue, and the doctor not make a sound or something like that, like help, help, or anything like that. They ruined that nice suspenseful sequence, but they get back to the suspense by him getting back in the car and then ultimately Michael killing him. So yeah, that works as a scene in a horror movie. It's just this movie as a whole. Another positive, I did like the granddaughter character, or I should say I like the actress who played the granddaughter. I really identify with her as a character who felt and identified with Laurie Strode and felt bad how everybody was just her mother was just kind of dismissing her after all these years. And we, the audience, knows it's like, no, but she's right. You just haven't gotten your, you know, experience with Michael yet. So, I mean, I liked the worry that she had in her face and the care she had for her grandmother. So that actress did a really good job, even in the scene where Michael was sitting right next to her, which I'm sure we'll get to. But I did like Jamie Lee Curtis as far as her feeling affected about what happened, 40 years ago. Yeah, those are some small positives, but it really isn't much more from me.
Now, we discussed earlier now, and we agreed on it.
What did we discuss?
What would have been so much cooler about that bus crash?
I'm glad you kept us on focus on that. Which would have been so much cooler? Let me state the coolness first. What would have been cooler is when Laurie Strode was watching Michael being transferred to the bus, if the character Laurie Strode would have caused the accident, which allowed Michael to be free, because she was so obsessed about Michael all these years and wanted to, you know, see the finality of she killing him herself.
Yes.
And then with all the murders that would have happened the remaining of the movie, for that to all rest on her shoulders, to me, character-wise, that would have been way more interesting of a story. But they obviously didn't go for that, maybe.
Brandon, now let me ask you, are we to guess who crashed the bus, or are we told it's the doctor, or what are we doing here?
I really don't know who I really crushed. From what I've heard from, you know, reviews and stuff, it sounds like the doctor was the whole guy behind this.
Dr. Loomis was a doctor in his trade, but after evaluating this person, Michael Myers, he abandoned all of his experience and study in his field of psychology to come to the consensus that no, we're dealing with pure evil. I'm not going to try to explain this. I don't want to study him anymore. He needs to be killed.
Yeah.
Whereas this new Loomis, he does stuff that's so out of character in the profession of a psychologist.
Yeah,
if we're left to believe that he caused the bus accidents, that's stupid.
Or even he allowed the guy to go up to Michael and show him the mask, which no doctor would have allowed that, I don't think.
By the way, my 3-year-old laughed when the doctor popped up with the mask on.
There you go.
He laughed and like looking around, saying, "That's not Michael Myers," and was laughing.
That
proves it, Mike, right there, that your 3-year-old laughed at a moment that wasn't supposed to be laughed at.
Sure.
It just doesn't feel like, that
so,
doesn't feel
so what's
right.
The purpose of this character, this new Loomis in this movie? Because Michael walking around free in Haddonfield doesn't know where Laurie Strode is.
Sure, and he falls upon all the characters that he needs to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To get there.
Mm-hmm. So the only purpose, obviously, for this new Loomis character is to drive Michael to Laurie Strode's house.
Sure.
I mean, that's really the only purpose of this character is to be in this movie.
Now, we were discussing, sorry to cut you off, we were discussing earlier, Brandon, maybe you can help us out. This is before you got here. So, October 30th, they go visit Michael and show him the mask, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. He gets out the night of the bus
crash. The transfers happen in that evening.
The 30th. So, fast forward to the cemetery scene the next morning, am I right? The 31st, and Michael's there. They hadn't heard from anyone on their text alerts or anything like that.
And they do this often. They go visit serial killers, and they had a breakthrough in the past. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So their colleagues know that they're going to go visit Michael Myers.
Yeah.
The next morning, Michael Myers is free.
He's already at the cemetery?
Do they have the same clothes on? See, I need to see that again because they go see Laurie on the 30th as well, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So he hadn't escaped yet, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I guess my question is, I don't know if we're nitpicking, man. I mean, obviously it's a movie. They got to make moves. But I mean, now you're talking, no one knows anything. You know, she's got her back to the TV when she finds out.
Yeah.
Right?
This is a town that suffered a mass murder of 5 people 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Sure.
This convicted killer is free the day 40 years later. Yeah,
And no one can find out about this.
Like, he's walking around daytime.
Yeah, and he's
on Halloween day.
And 5 people. I mean that's awful. Obviously.
But hold up though. Let's rest on that point. A character in the movie makes that point.
Sure, the kid.
That
right?
By today's standard, somebody who killed 5 people is not that big of a deal, because in today's standard, 2018, there's high schoolers who have killed more people.
Yeah, you almost should have left. Excuse me. Part two at the hospital, because that would have stacked up.
Yeah,
exactly.
But now you take that away, and you're only left with, you know, the five people.
Which, yeah. To leave me in the mood of this movie, you're actually better off not having that character say something so obviously true.
I think
it's
I think that they're trying to do so many Easter eggs in some kind of a meta way, but.
Exactly.
Again, this is
they
not
got too meta.
This is what's frustrating about this, like that type of, you know, thing they add in, is because this is not Scream. This is not those kind of films.
Exactly. Right.
This is a Halloween movie that's supposed to be taken serious.
That's a great point.
This is seriously not one of those movies, and it's just like, I don't understand. And actually, you know, to be the guy who says that, actually, that's the only teen character I actually like, besides ironically, he's the only character I like, and he's the one that points out of all this stuff.
Right.
Because actually, I feel like he's, you know, the smartest one of everyone except for the granddaughter.
We feel like the granddaughter in the movie. It's like, dude.
Right. Yeah, that's
right.
Sure.
Yeah.
The comedy, especially the jokes talking about guacamole and being sexy and what is this? Are we?
Can I touch on the point that you made though? Because I think that's a really brilliant point. It's like Scream was a meta movie commenting on these horror franchises, where you're incorporating the meta sensibility from Scream in this movie. It doesn't work. You kind of mess up the tone completely. So I thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, and there's actually a video that pointed out. There was a reviewer that pointed out that. They hint at, they give you a Easter egg from every single movie of the franchise. Now, I don't know how many people are going to notice that. I didn't notice it until, I mean, you know, there's some things you'll pick up on, but they do it from the first, the second, the third, you know, even to Rob Zombie's Halloween, they give a shout out to.
I agree with you. And one nod that I thought I was seeing, like, are they trying to give homage to Halloween 4 with the whole gas station? I'm like, huh? Are they trying to give homage to Halloween 5 with the whole she's prepping and got a trap for? Huh? But when I realized that they actually were, it's like you actually get not a man in black, but a black man in a black hat. It's like part 5.
Yeah,
I'm wait a minute. Now.
That's
like,
right.
Are you actually doing that?
Hope not.
Like, he got the same hat from the dude from part 5, and the dude in part 5 is wearing black, but instead of having all wear black, you just cast a black guy.
Resurrection, too. The word resurrection on the side of that bus.
Oh, didn't even think about that. Yeah. It's a simple nod, but obviously... even though it doesn't feel like it's a nod, but yeah, just, I guess that's the only one you want.
Yeah.
You just want to say resurrection. You don't want to say anything else about that movie.
That H2O bathroom scene and the zombie bathroom scene with Big Joe Grizzly.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
The head stomp.
Yep.
That was from Zombie 2, correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The mental patients ran out. Isn't that from 1?
When they're on the road?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
It's closer. Homaging part one is allowed. That's fine.
Absolutely. But when you're adding in the other things, then you're trying to, like, why are you doing this when you don't want to acknowledge the other films?
Yeah, exactly.
Burning them up at the end. That's the end of 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like.
I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know where they were going. The ending was uneventful, man. Like, I was unsatisfied.
I was like, I was expecting, you know, everyone talked about, oh, they're going to kill Jamie or Tori off. Yeah. Like,
which they should have.
They got to do something. She's going to keep coming back. What is she going to do?
Because she came out and there was an article saying she would be willing to come back to do a sequel if David Gordon Green comes back to direct.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Who directed Pineapple Express and Joe, which, you know, I would definitely recommend Joe, but Pineapple Express. But that's my biggest, like, if she has to come back just because of, for David Gordon Green to come back and Danny McBride, I don't want them back near this. I didn't like the writing, especially with the humor.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that, dude. Yep.
The humor is seriously one of the worst things in this movie. It's It takes you off. You got these cops talking about their lunch.
Awful.
Yeah, wait, that was weird. All like, of a sudden.
This is just so random, put out in a tense situation. Then you got the I mentioned the guacamole horny thing with the awkward teenager. Well,
can I mention those two cops right there? Because I think me and Mike were talking about that logistically, as far as if we're talking about these two cops know that their superior officer, the sheriff, was actually one of the officers on scene the original night that Michael Myers was out killing people, but yet they disrespect him in the movie by calling him a burnout. But in that moment that they're calling him a burnout, Michael Myers is currently loose in 2018. So you would think that they actually would respect their superior officer who has experience and not call him a burnout in a moment where this guy is free. But it almost seems like they don't even know Michael Myers is free.
Yeah. There's no like
urgency.
Yeah, there's no sense of urgency. You're right. Yeah. You know,
talking about their lunch.
Speaking of the misplaced humor. You know, and you spoke to this last week, Dom. Let's talk about Michael in the closet scene with the kid. Listen, that you shouldn't have showed in the commercial. And Dom brought this up last week, and he's absolutely right. I knew he was there, obviously, because I seen the commercial. Mm-hmm. And then for the kid to make jokes totally takes me out of
the tension,
the terror and the tension. And,
Michael's supposed to be scary.
Yeah.
And this is a Michael that's pure evil and supposed to bring suspense, and all you have to do is bring in a joke when he's killing a babysitter. Yes. Like
I listened to a podcast recently, and I think this guy, Rossitron, made this point that he can't take these horror movies seriously anymore as he did when he was younger, because all he thinks about is, like, once you see the guy, the serial killer, the Michael Myers, the whoever, standing there, and then they do a cut, and he's somewhere else. He's like, all he can think about is them just running to that spot now. And it made me think about the moment with the closet, because it's like, why did Michael go in the closet?
Yeah, I just...
Why? Right?
Why?
I don't...
In this house that's not Lori's, why did he go to the closet and just stay in there?
It feels so random.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's sure. Awesome for the trailer. But if you think about it logistically, why did he do that?
Yeah.
And I don't blame the kid for this. I blame the kid, the kid did great. It was really good.
He's probably
for what
the
he was,
funniest in there. Yeah.
He was funny.
He's going to be in the way, movies from this before.
I think he deserves to get other roles for this. But yes. I mean, I think for the writers, Danny McBride, and I believe David Gordon Green, I believe there's a third writer on it. You should know better. If you guys were a fan, Danny said he was a big fan of the franchise. If you're a big fan of the franchise,
I always think they're lying when they say that.
If you were a big fan of the franchise, you would not be putting this humor that you guys are well known for. And everybody said one of my biggest things I was afraid of was the humor. Now, was the humor as much as I thought it was going to be? No. But when the humor was in pretty much a lot of the scenes, it was hard to watch. I'm throwing my hands in the air like, God, I'm just like, there's times where I wanted to walk up because of that humor.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sorry to cut you off, but dare I say it, man, it felt like a fan film to me that they were able to get Jamie Lee Curtis, and it just felt that way. I forgot it was Haddonfield. I had to be reminded by the sheriff. It didn't feel like fall to me. Didn't feel like Halloween.
Well, I have to come back to the point, and it's my biggest gripe of the entire movie. We were touching on it, but Mike was free in daytime. October 31st, he's stalking the cemetery. First of all, why did he go to the cemetery? So he's returning to a scene of one of his crimes of stealing a headstone. Why the police weren't waiting for him, I don't know. But still, in the real life events of the Patriots Day in Boston, an American city was shut down because two terrorists were running out loose. Michael Myers, having killed somebody in the same town 40 years ago, but now he's free 40 years later, the day of, and to see parents and children still trick-or-treating that night as if they didn't know that he was free is the biggest flaw of this movie.
Absolutely.
That town should have been vacated, and would have made a better climax if it was Michael Myers versus Laurie Strode in a vacant, evacuated Haddonfield.
Yep.
With them just facing off. That would have been a dope moment to see Michael at the one end of the street and then Laurie at the one end of the street, and they're going to meet and have their final confrontation. That image would have been dope. But no, you just got pretty much a generic, keyboard out trick-or-treating, and Michael gets to kill a couple random people in their houses for no reason.
The daughter, Karen, played by Judy Greer.
Oh, yeah.
There was no chemistry between these as a mother and daughter. Like,
yeah.
Even the backstory, I never believed her once. Like,
That backstory would have been interesting if it was more of a stripped down movie. If there was no granddaughter and it was just about Laurie Strode and her daughter and the shit that she put her daughter through, that ending would have paid off if, like, wow, after all these years, I finally get to utilize this training and then also realize that all the shit she was talking about all this year was actually true. There's the fucking guy right there. But they didn't. They just added all this other stuff. And like I said, it could have went either way. Laurie Strode and daughter, or just Laurie Strode and younger daughter. It just doesn't fit to me.
I just don't think Judy Greer really fit the
yeah,
her as the daughter. Like, I just didn't think she fit.
On paper, Judy Greer as Laurie Strode's daughter, like, basically, Judy Greer looks like the daughter of Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, I can see that. I can see that relation.
Yeah, I kind of, you know. At first, I was like, this is interesting, but I know they're not going to probably use her in the right way. And she makes a line in the movie. It's like, there's no such thing as evil. There's only peace and love.
Yeah, that was awful.
I didn't buy Judy Greer and the guy who played her husband as a couple.
Oh.
No, I sure didn't. Know,
I just dropped something on my penis. Yeah. Like, what?
Nobody gave a shit when he died,
I
by
know.
The way.
I clapped.
No, I don't know. Judy Greer said one thing once, right? Hey, wherever his name is.
Yeah. But every time I talk about it, there just seems like I talk about the negatives more than the positives.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I won't say it's a bad movie. I think if there was no other Halloween or anything, it'd be a fun little horror movie. I mean, that's what I'd say.
Yeah.
Like, I have H2O higher than this. Because I feel like, because especially the connection to her and her son in that movie, and that was Josh Hartnett's first movie too, and they have so much better connection. You feel like they've, you know, it's been such a strained relationship, but you feel that. And here, it's like nothing.
I didn't like the mask in H2O or the dude, that, his movement and all, but I have a lot more resolve in Laurie.
Yeah, exactly.
More satisfying.
I mean, there's some images I like in H2O, like when he comes down from the top ledge where it's just him, his arm, he kind of lowers himself down. That's
that was cool.
Him pulling the tables, that's dope images and everything like that. But like the close-up of them meeting in the window, I hate that H2O still acknowledges part two,
right?
But yet there's no burn scars around his eyes from that close up, or
his hands and stuff like that.
So it's like they were lazy with that. So.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier, me and Dom, about, I know that they probably don't care, you know, Carpenter and Jamie Lee, but if they did care, and if you could privately ask them, do you think they liked this movie? Outside of the money they got and all that shit, but do you think they were satisfied with what they got?
I really don't know at this.
I
feel like Jamie might, because she gets a better resolve, and I still think she gets a better resolve here than Resurrection, because I know Resurrection, she only did that because it was part of her contract, and she only wanted 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this still did more for her character than Resurrection, but then at the same time, that's just, I don't know. Carpenter, I don't think he gives two shits.
He doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, he doesn't. It just feels like anytime people got excited about him being executive producer, he did the music. And anytime it wasn't the score for the original, I was kind of like, it doesn't feel like Halloween.
Yeah, when it had that added score, I was like, this, what is this? Because I literally screamed on my review. It's like, all you need is the score. All you need is the exact score from the original film.
Yes.
You can tweak it a little, and a lot of the movies have done that, but it still felt like Halloween.
He was on it, you know?
Yeah, but. So I think his son was also working on it to help too. So I don't know where he was just like, I'll try something different here, or, you know, trying to feel like he's doing something. And this is no disrespect to Carpenter. He did a great job with the first Halloween, but honestly, my favorite of his films is that ones I've seen is The Thing. Yeah. I think he did a really good job. That delivered the tension. There's no humor in that film. There's just something about that one that worked for me now more than Halloween does. I guess just maybe because I watched the Rob Zombies for so many years. I've been watching those continuously more because it's just harder to, for some reason, the older one, or the original, it's just been harder for me to watch. It just feels so slow and just...
The original Halloween?
Yeah. Oh. It just feels harder to
watch. I mean, my opinion is Halloween, the original, is a perfect movie. And it's because of those slow moments also, it's just a very small, contained movie. It's like there's no filler whatsoever. It's just a nice meal, and that's what I love about that original so much. And the fact that the sequel is just later that night, and it's also so simple and contained. Yeah. It's like, that's what makes me love those two films together. They're just so precise
in what they do. I think the second one, the reason why it's probably one of the more criticized ones, because it does amp out more on the gore, and it changes because, well, obviously it's from a different director. It's not Carpenter directing this one, but it does feel different from that original. And the one thing I will say about the original, where you mentioned about you not like seeing Michael's face, we do get to see Michael's face in that first original movie. So Carpenter did something like that. So Halloween 5 is the worst one of them because they made him kind of cry, because when he sees his niece, which I get the idea for that, but I mean, when you think of it, it may sound good, but when you see it, maybe you shouldn't have done it.
I didn't mind that moment because I like how he snapped out of it, and it was he's chasing a little girl throughout the whole movie, so it's like it makes you kind of almost think, it's like, did she reach a primal part of him, a core part of him, and then he just snapped out of that back to his evil shit.
Again, if he was pure evil and he was not really human, then he should never have hadn't shed a tear, if you look at it that way. So, you know, you're kind of like,
That was always just one person's evaluation.
These Michaels change, you know, 4, 5, and 6 had to deal with a cult, the thing went from,
Five doesn't really deal with the cult. It's just that man in black.
Well, that's where it really.
He later in six is the cult leader.
But that's where you see
the cult was introduced. Actually,
you get
two.
To see the symbol of Von Michael, I think, in the fifth one, and you see them.
Do you think back to 2018 Halloween? If they would shed maybe 3-4 characters, you'd accept it a little more. Maybe a couple of boyfriends and things.
Yeah,
and,
I think in the humor, especially the humor. I think if you cut out the scene with the little boy saying, "Oh shh." Oh shit!
I could deal with the kid. I'm talking more of the teenagers.
Away with the best friend.
Deal away with the awkward kid, and the boyfriend. Obviously,
your suggestion of getting rid of Judy Greer and just going straight to the granddaughter would have been
a
lot better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a lot of moving parts, I think, that pulled you away.
I mean, the fact that we were at the party at the high school, we didn't need to be there.
I know we weren't introduced to their high school. It was in like H2O where we're introduced to this, you know, whole school and seeing all these kids. It wasn't like that. We just are introduced to these three kids.
Yeah, you're right. The setting of that school where she worked, it all worked out in the script. You know,
yeah,
it
fit better. Yeah. This didn't do that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. A few of the characters. The journalist. I thought the guy who hold the mask. I thought he was going to be I thought he was going to be the new Dr. Loomis.
Funny you bring him up. A lot of people had problems with those two. I didn't.
I didn't either.
I didn't really have a problem. Maybe the whole mask and Michael turns his head. I don't know. But they didn't bother me as much as, you know, characters.
I think they just came off as super British in the movie. It's like you heard nobody else. It's like, why did they need to be British characters? It's like,
I think that's maybe, but I just felt like there could have been more interesting things with those characters and the other characters we got in the way. And then they sold this as that he was going to be a main character, especially the guy holding the mask was going to be a main character in this movie. That's how I saw it.
Because we don't know. He might be alive still.
Oh, yeah. We never.
Because he just kind of was all.
Yeah, that's true. So he could be back.
I mean, to the point where I didn't think that the new Loomis was still alive after he got shot. I'm like, why are y'all bringing him back? It's like, I thought he was dead when he got shot.
I like how he can drag Michael into the cop car, too.
Does that make any sense?
That was neat. You know what I mean?
The whole sequence was, you know, when I just was like holding my head in the movie. I'm like, you're picking up Michael Myers, you're sitting him next to her, and you're driving.
Right.
I'm like, what's going on? She just trying to like, I'll tell you what he said if you stop the car. It's like, I'm not believing anything that's happening right now.
I'm not believing anything. This is just one of those.
Oh my God. I was like, and he actually stops because he's so curious. Okay, what did he say?
Right.
Like, it don't matter what he said. It's like, how is that going to affect you?
I didn't buy much of that. Yeah.
Okay, Yeah, Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis. I bet you when they saw that sequence, they were like, "Whoa, what the fuck?"
Yeah, and they're not gonna say anything. Exactly. But,
we still want to cash this check, but what the fuck?
Yeah.
I think Jamie Lee is more to me. She was more willing to come back because I think the fans really. I think she respects the fans. She knows the fans love her and adore her. So I think she was more than willing to do this. I think Carpenter was just doing it for the check. I don't think he gives a shit about anything now. It just seems like that way. Like, you know, it's frustrating because I know everyone loves Carpenter. Halloween's great. Vampires is really good. The Thing is great as well. It's just, you know.
I'm sorry, but the Amber Heard joint that he directed recently is not that bad to the point where I'm like, why didn't Carpenter direct this?
Mm-hmm. Maybe he just doesn't have interest in directing anymore. Maybe that, or he's just, and now there's been a rumor that, he maybe has hinted at maybe directing They Live 2.
Oh, yeah, I kind of heard about
that. I don't know where his head is at right now.
Probably more on political things, which fits with him doing They Live 3, They Live 2. You got to think that the only other director that he handed this franchise off to was Rick Rosenthal, and he directed that shit.
Let me hide my Resurrection DVD back. I don't want you guys seeing that. That's my guilty pleasure, man, you know?
Yeah,
there's this video on YouTube that talks about the whole franchise, and the way they ended the video is with Busta Rhymes saying, Michael Myers is a killer shark. And they go, and there you have it. Michael Myers is a killer shark.
Right.
That's that's how dumb that movie is. You got Busta Rhymes giving a monologue at the end.
The only thing I liked in that movie, Resurrection, is when he says, trick or treat, motherfucker. That's the only thing I remember. What ruins that even is when the girl goes like, and this is for her. And this is for her friend. Yeah. And with a chainsaw, and it's just like,
this is for all of them. Right. I was like, at the time, I was like, this is how y'all ending this franchise? Yeah. Like, oh my God. It's
You know, but I thought, and I'll still stand by this, I thought the premise of it was good, man. Like, just if you said, hey, let's do a movie about this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Going into the Michael Myers
house. I think this does have to do with the studio interference as well. I think and there's no documentary on of all the movies. This one didn't have a documentary of the behind the scenes of.
There's one for 4 and 5 though, because
four, five, and six, and sit on the end of the Halloween H2O. They do talk a little bit about Resurrection, but it's not much. But it's obviously they really
well. Rick Rosenthal, who did that one and did two, talks about how it's a big pot, a bunch of chefs, and there's a lot of interference.
When that happens, nothing.
And I can imagine he hadn't directed a film like for so long, and they like.
There's no way he's just directing that by himself.
Yeah, I mean. His wife, the nurse who you know who was there, who was in the second one, also is his wife in real life. So I that's dope that he put his wife you know, back in the movie and everything, playing the same character. I thought that was.
I feel bad for Rick because he got stuck with a movie that the studio shouldn't have moved forward with. And I know they try to do Halloween 9 Retribution, and then they try to get Rob to.
And hey, that was such a dumb title. Like, why would you Retribution? People gonna have to pick up dictionaries and understand the word.
And then you're asking Rob to do Halloween 9, and Rob is like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Right.
Yeah. And then he wants to do his own take. Obviously, they weren't going to ever approve the young Michael for a whole film.
Right.
That was never going to happen. I think even Rob knew that, but he wanted an idea. Look, you have to do something different. And that's what Rob brought to his versions, whether you like them or not, which I feel like a lot of people hate him for just because they feel like it disrespects John Carpenter. Look at John Carpenter right now. All he wants, I don't feel like he cares. So, like, at least, Rob did there was an article on Bloody Disgusting that he was talking about. It's like, it's really hard to gauge what you really did on the remake because people are just wanting the same thing, and you don't want to try even with a little different. And that's why I think he also prefers Halloween 2 of his, because he was allowed to do his own thing. And
Halloween 2 is more of his own thing, like Rob Zombie doing his own thing. It's like,
and it's
like
just
really deviating away from restraints.
So I think, and that was, you know, and he said it was a hard time shooting. He said it was a hard time shooting Halloween 2 and coming back. It was just, you know, dealing with the studios was never easy,
man. But I kind of almost feel like it's like, yeah, give the director less toys and he'll turn out with a better film. Because that is like, restricting him like that turned out a better movie to me. I like Halloween 2. I mean, him to kill both Michael Myers and Laurie Strode
and Dr. Loomis.
Yeah, you're right. And to the point where, as much as I like that movie, I was like, am I okay with this?
the studio came to him for the sequel. Yeah. Mike, you're a director. Wouldn't you, like, if you were opportunity to direct a film that you could remake or see your vision through, wouldn't you take it? It's an opportunity that can, you know, for good or bad, it's an experience. Yeah. And it's, I would think, and I know Rob. And,
well, let me piggyback on that question. Like, what is a beloved horror film of yours that you think should be untouched, but untouched. Studio would still approach you like, we want you to direct this?
I felt Poltergeist should have been untouched.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But would I have done it if they approached me? Sure.
I think,
yeah, and I would have you expected would, to get bombarded and get killed, you know, online.
I whatever, was actually but, hoping for a sequel to the remake because I actually like the remake.
The remake, I don't think is terrible. The problem with it after, because I finally watched the original, and the original is so good. It feels, it doesn't feel like a PG horror. PG oh, horror. Hell
no. Yeah. 80s was crazy about that.
It's creepy. It's like, you know, and then the remake, I think the remake just had a tough, like, doing remakes, especially with the Poltergeist, and you're trying to do it more modern, it's such a tough task. And I think they did a okay job. The guy who directed Gil House, I think he did a terrific first time with Monster House, that animated.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
So yeah. I thought he was the right choice for it. I just think overall maybe Poltergeist was just, there was just so many things, you know, there was the you know, weird curse or the deaths that surrounded a lot of the original actors from the first couple films. So maybe it wasn't a movie that should have been touched, but I think especially the one thing I'll say about going into a remake with any classic horror film or even movie in general is have passion for it. That's the biggest key.
Sure.
Yeah. That's, I think Rob had passion for it. He loves the original Halloween. He loves a bunch of these horror films. So I think he didn't want to, he wasn't trying to disrespect Carpenter or anything.
I honestly think Rob Zombie had more passion for the originals than he did for his own remakes, because that's why he deviated from the look of it so much.
All right, we're going to bring in a special guest here, Ben DeSantis, to come talk and have a little discussion.
So, Ben, any thoughts when you went in? What would you expect? What'd you get? What'd you feel when you walked out?
All different emotions, right? Right. So yeah. I went in expecting Halloween, you know, and the whole movie was not the whole movie,
but the
gist of the movie was horrible. You know, the storyline's horrible.
Can we call it
half the acting's horrible? Can we call the dialogue, the jokes?
Yeah, let's call it the Halloween Halloween Express.
Yeah, right.
That's what it was. It was a Pineapple Express Halloween. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like a Halloween stoner flick without the weed. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And then I went out of there. You know what, though? It's funny, though, because when I walked out of it, I wasn't like, you know what, I fucking hate this movie. You know, I walked out there and I'm like, and I even told my wife, I don't know how I feel. And the more I thought about it, and then I talked to Brandon the next day and I'm like, you know what? Them, like, you know, me and Mike talk, them showing him as like a human, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's what killed it for the most part for me.
Oh, really?
That's what really, because it's like, you know, Scream. Okay. Mm-hmm. Scream, the whole movie, you're like, oh, I wonder who it is. What it is. Yeah, and it keeps you entertained and stuck to it. But in this one, you're like, it's just an old guy. You know? And that's kind of how you feel. And, you know, it's just, it takes away from the whole.
Actually, that's a good point, because I honestly felt, this is kind of crazy, I thought Michael had a little bit of a hard time with that first journalist. Right?
It's like, why are you struggling?
Like the Michael that we saw 40 years ago would have had no problem with him.
He just picked you up and handled it.
Like Linda's boyfriend that was in the sheet. He picked up Michael with one arm, right? So why do you have such a problem with the journalist?
Exactly, bro.
Because he's older, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. That's just how I feel about it.
I feel you.
So I want a little bit more from it.
Yeah.
And I want, you know, and after that, the movie wasn't scary. Honestly,
it was not.
The only time, and it's funny because you guys were all bashing the scene where he's dragging him in the cop car.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time I was scared, because you put yourself in that position of being in the back seat with the dude.
I actually agree with you,
you
because
know?
I was feeling the same fear that she would have been feeling.
Yeah, a little claustrophobic.
I was like, you got fucking Michael Myers sitting next to you.
I agree with that. But I think the reason why for us were just, I was scratching my head. It was just because the doctor puts the mask on himself. Like, why?
Yeah, that was not needed.
If you want to put him in the back seat, fine. But you don't need to put that mask on.
I didn't even think about this. The granddaughter knows what Michael Myers looks like.
Because he just threw the mask in there on him, so she knows. Yeah,
that's crazy.
But will they play upon that in the sequel? And no one, if they bring back Gordon Green and McBride to do it, I don't know if they will. That's
another crazy thing. Michael Myers was trapped in that basement and that basement was full of fire, what happens to the mask on his face?
But then remember, after we see the fire, he looked like he disappeared, like no longer there.
Yeah, but the intensity of that heat, though.
It still had to melt it or something, right? Like, kind of like to the skin.
It's weathered from age, so why wouldn't it be affected by it?
But that's my problem.
40 years later, you know?
But I mean, when you're like looking at the, when you see him on the steps and then it literally goes back and then it's just like, he's like literally not there.
But the only logical step that you'd have to take is that he broke out of a wall. The house is collapsing.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying he just like, he like, vanished like he was a ghost or something. There was a way he got out.
Yeah, but even in escaping, that those walls are full of fire, which is still affected with the heat mask and stuff like
that. Yeah, he could still, but he's still alive. They were not going to kill him.
They didn't even explain it.
I just don't get why you needed obviously
like
the
Batman.
Obviously the fire an Easter egg to the second one, which you guys want to ignore. But why do we need that as the way that you kind of try to kill him off, but really don't? Like, this the ending was so anticlimactic. I like that. I like some of the nice shots where you have Laurie coming out of the shadows like Michael did.
Oh, yeah, that was
cool. That was pretty cool. And then her falling off the top part of the house and on the ground, he did in the original.
Play the music
and then, and then he looks down and it's she's gone.
Yeah.
I like that. But then
I almost forgot those little nods were there. But yeah, they were nice when I saw it.
But just, man, that ending, like, I think they should have at least killed, Karen. I feel like she really bugged me throughout this film. I did not like her. I think she is one of the worst characters. I think that my worst.
Karen is Judy Greer?
Yeah, Judy Greer.
That would have been a nice little moment for Michael to kill her and for Laurie to be affected closely by like somebody actually like the person that she was trying to train to protect all this time has actually got killed and now it's just her and her granddaughter.
Which would have been cool if it played into the alternate scenario that you played out earlier with the bus and how they all got loose.
Yeah.
So she got him free and then killed the daughter.
Yeah.
Right?
So many things, can we
build a time machine?
Yeah.
Because I think we just fixed this movie.
Yeah. Stuff, right?
We just fixed
it. That's good.
You're right. That would have been awesome. Like, that would have been,
Wow. Do you know of any, did you guys hear of anything where what the ending was? Was there a different ending?
Yeah, apparently there was there was another ending they shot, but it wasn't, people didn't like it, so they reshot it, but I heard it's not as good as this ending was. Apparently wasn't as interesting. So I don't really know.
Let me ask this, it's like, do those people have an NDA still, now that this movie is out? I mean, can we track these people down? What happened? For real.
Can you tell us how?
Right, for real. Because
that'd be really bad.
Yeah, because I mean, like I was saying earlier, that goes against the pitch you gave Jamie Lee Curtis if you have to change something based on the audience's reaction to what you put together already.
It's crazy. It's one of those things that I've been bothered because you heard that about The Predator. They made there was one thing that someone said, and they were like, okay,
and that's why I'm waiting for the DVD, because stuff I saw in the trailer I didn't see in the movie. So
I don't trust that Blu-ray going to have the special features you made.
You're right, because they don't do Blu-rays the way they do it used to about now.
Well, certain films, if there's such a behind-the-scenes drama, they're not going to give you a lot. Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
They give you a little bit, but you don't get an audio commentary. You're not going to get those stuff from the directors or anything, which is really frustrating, and that's why I was like, the ones you can find, you really hold on to, and that's why I'm holding hope for a Halloween 2 Rob Zombie behind the scenes cut. I want to really see the making of that. But you know, that also was tons of drama, and it was a hard shoot.
You probably won't get that until another 10, 15 years, you know what I mean?
Thank you.
I got the anniversary of it or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You would have thought they would have maybe released it on a steelbook, because they just released the Rob Zombie Collector's Edition steelbook, which, I mean, there's the first film, just not the second one.
Okay.
Because I don't think...
Well, that's what I'm so surprised that he decided to do a sequel to Devil's Rejects, and it's in a can. It's coming out next year.
Three
and I can't
from Hell.
Yes, I cannot.
He said
wait,
he promised a different kind of film compared from where you got the first one was like more like
because House and Devil's Rejects are two different. One is silly. Kind of craziness,
but
and one
still,
is dead
but,
serious
but,
craziness.
But still, it freaked me out. I remember, I'll be honest, actually, when I first saw House of a Thousand Corpses, I didn't like it, actually.
I feel you. It may take a couple.
Because I was only 12 when I first saw this. So it was such, at the time of horror films, this was really one of the weird things I've seen.
It was very similar to the first Texas Chainsaw, or it, even the second.
I've never seen Texas Chainsaw. Okay, so I saw years later. Mm-hmm. So this was such a different, and especially that one scene where he's like holding the gun to the cop's head, and I'm like, whoa, what's he doing? But then after rewatching it, I started enjoying it more and more, and I'm like, look, this is different from any of the horror movies I've seen.
What's so beautiful about Devil's Rejects is that. Not from Siskel and Ebert, because I think...
It was Ebert and Roper.
Roper, yeah. They gave it two thumbs up. And that's what solidified it for me. Not that their approval, but it's just... Yeah. I loved it, and I couldn't believe these serious critics actually appreciated it.
I know, because I remember...
Well.
Some acceptance.
Yeah.
You know?
Remember, like, they criticized the Friday the 13th franchise.
Oh, yeah.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
To Devil's Rejects, but I think because Rob tries to add more to the characters than what... Unfortunately for Friday the 13th, they don't delve into characters. But, I mean, that wasn't the point for the film.
Yeah,
but Devil's Rejects, you got these character developments from these characters.
Devil's Rejects is as if Tarantino decided to do a horror movie. Yeah. And that's what Rob Zombie kind of was able to capture. It's like,
and I love that ending with Freebird. I love that ending. It's one of my favorite endings.
I'm glad you brought the ending, because that's the only issue I have with this sequel. How are they going to do it? I'm all game for it. How are they going to do it?
Because remember, they didn't know that. But here's the thing. Yeah, you see them all getting shot, but you never see them die or anything like that. And it's
a little bit of a cop-out.
After the freeze, it goes straight up a crane shot and over all the mountains. You're like, did that really happen? And from what some behind-the-scenes photos, you could see still some scars on, like, a baby and on her... So you could say it did happen, but they didn't kill them.
So that would be an automatic flaw for me. I think
he wasn't planning for a sequel. Obviously.
Oh no, he wasn't.
I think the problem has been trying to get projects going, because he's had a couple non.
I think we're getting Free from Hell because Salem and 31 weren't as beloved as his.
Lords
two.
Of Salem was actually produced by Blumhouse as well.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was. Crazy. It only made. It only made $1.5 million at the box office, compared to his Halloween films made a total of $120 million. You know, so that's a complete difference, but. The Lords of Salem, I believe, was going to be a hard sell anyway, because that's talking about the witchcraft and just some really...
But the thing is, when you got my man who directed the Raid series doing the flick for Netflix, Apostle, you're seeing how that should have been done. And Rob Zombie should have been able to crank out something similar to what you see in Apostle.
But
he wasn't mature enough as a filmmaker
I think this was actually, Lords of Salem, in a way, his most mature film, because he wasn't violent. Yeah, there's disturbing imagery and some, you know, gore in there, but it wasn't the kind of film, well, this is different, and some people did, like, I've heard, say, did prefer, like, really thought it was his best character piece.
I don't think I actually saw
I don't know if I agree with that, but I like the film, but it's, I think the second high, like, if you go on the Rotten Tomatoes score, which I really don't, I look at them, but I don't really think you should base off that.
Yeah.
His highest scoring film of all of his films is 31 at 51%.
Really?
Really?
That's his highest.
That's surprising that it wouldn't be Devil's Rejects.
Devil's Rejects, or, you know, I think his second highest would be between probably Devil's Rejects and Halloween. House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects are both House of a Thousand Corpses is like 19%, which is, I mean, I'm not surprised by these scores, because I know these are, you know, not everyone's going to be a fan of his, you know, the way he shoot, like, his violent, his, you know, his vulgar, his mouth, but I mean, I just think
and his insistence on bringing his wife in every project. That's actually the only flaw of Halloween 2, to tell you the truth. That the dream sequence stuff doesn't necessarily need to be there, and I don't mind
it
as much.
I think it's a way for Michael can speak without him actually speaking, and it's a way.
True.
It's you know.
It's giving Michael kind of a motivation that he never really needed. That was one of the most brilliant aspects of Halloween 2 Zombies, is how he dealt with Laurie finding out she's his father. Whereas a couple characters knew already, and they were trying not for her to get that information. And the way how she found out through happenstance and how she reacted to it. Those were the only two people she really cared about. And in her last moment, she kind of brushed them off or cussed them off or... You know, and then they die.
But
and
I don't.
That's the tragedy. I'll say this: I
don't think Annie really. I don't think Annie knew.
Did she? Yeah, that's right. Because her dad never told her.
Laurie says, "Oh, tell your dad Angel says hi," but no one ever. Her dad never explains to her what. And I think what Rob is trying to do, he's trying to be subtle about that. I understand that. But I think some people probably like.
I think he just did a great job with that moment right there, completely.
The Rob Zombies. Yeah. See, the problem with me is I watched the second one on FX, so it fucked it up for me. Yeah, right,
TV version.
So I told him because he has it, so he's going to rewatch it.
I have both the unrated director's cut and the director's cut, the theatrical version. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe you want to see the theatrical version.
And the first one I liked. I just feel like for some reason with the kid and that whole thing, it just dragged on too long.
I feel
I
feel like that's the one thing that he had a chance to make different.
I get that. He's trying to tell a story and everything, but I just feel like it for a Halloween movie. It's the same thing with the new one. It's just different takes.
Absolutely.
And it takes away from an actual Halloween movie.
Yeah.
Of what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you guys are talking about motivation, and I'm trying to sit here and think about the new Halloween and what Michael's motivation was in this movie.
Yeah,
he's killing people that don't need to necessarily be killed.
Yeah,
right?
if they take away the relationship between Laurie and Michael, then why is he, once he's free from the bus, why is he going to Haddonfield?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He almost should have left them brother and sister.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or just make this whole movie about the granddaughter.
And just make Laurie Strode just a random person who was affected by this crime, who actually ends up helping the granddaughter, who isn't her granddaughter anymore. Dude, we are fixing this movie left and right. Dude.
Like it just feels like the way that it's like it feels like she talks about Michael constantly. It feels like.
And if the doctor never took him there, would he ever find her? Nope. Was he even really searching for her? Like, what's the key?
Yeah.
He goes to the house, beats somebody with a hammer, and then he stabs somebody else in the neck. Right? That had nothing to do with anything. And then you get a couple high school kids from a huge high school party, you know? Yep. And then that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple cops who are unaware of everything that's going on.
You kill Will Patton.
Off screen, those cops die.
Yeah.
You kill Will Patton, the sheriff.
Dude, I really liked him too.
I know, I did too.
Just as an actor, period.
You bring him in for that. That's disrespectful.
Everyone in that movie was brought in just for a short scene, though.
I know.
Yeah. That's what I sound like, is it just felt like a series of shorts all stacked together.
Yeah, I thought it was messed up. If you're going to make Will Patton's character supposedly be the first officer who arrived on scene and then to ultimately get killed by the psychologist.
Yeah, right. At least, like, a good going out, you know?
Not even Michael killing him.
Trying to fight him down or something. No, he gets stabbed in the neck.
Yeah, like, Michael could have got up from getting hit by the car and stabbed him. Yeah, just...
Some of these choices. Anything over better. So the ending of the movie, when they zoom in on her holding the knife, is that supposed to...
Hint at 4.
Why do that?
Yeah.
Are you trying to hint at 4?
Yeah, like, are you hinting at 4? And if you are... Why? Because Michael's not related and it's not a family thing anymore.
I know.
Exactly. So you're just jumping all around there. Huh?
Yeah, very
If you
much.
Wanted this family thing, if you wanted connected, you could have brought Danielle back to be the daughter, Josh Hartnett back as as John. But you can't connect those
only
two.
The only thing is, Judy Greer and Daniel Harris are probably the same age, actually. We can double check that, but...
Give me Daniel Harris any day over Judy Greer.
Exactly. She looks younger. Right.
But Judy Greer was just not the right actress. It was such a weird choice from the beginning, Judy Greer as the daughter. Like, it was interesting because it's another kind of name actress to be in a horror film. But it just did not fit. No connection. Like, you don't feel the chemistry between them. You just feel like you're off-put by Judy Greer's character.
Chemistry between anyone in that movie.
Yeah, not
honestly.
At all. Not at all. I mean...
Honestly, probably the granddaughter is the most.
Oh, yeah, well,
another flaw that I was dying to talk about last week, but... The false moment, this might be due to the re-edits or whatever, or the reshoots, but the false moment between the granddaughter and her boyfriend, where they never established that the granddaughter is a social media, a social butterfly, where she's constantly tied to her phone, and when the boyfriend sees her grab her phone, he's like, "You and your phone." He grabs it and tosses it in the pudding. Like, you never established that she was obsessed with her phone for him to get upset like that. So it was a false moment to me.
Yeah.
It was just like, whoa, where did this come from all of a sudden?
This thing just felt like...
It was a false moment for nothing, though. Because you're way ready for him to, like, storm off and get killed, right?
Yep.
But no, that's not something.
No.
And in 2018, do waterproof phones exist?
Yeah.
I'm sure pudding-proof phones exist. Right. I'm sorry, you can wipe that pudding off, dude. Get out of here.
Like, what was that?
Yeah.
don't know. Some of these choices in the
Producers, it was just for a money grab. But I wonder what producer LeBron James would do with the Friday the 13th franchise. You know what I mean?
That's going to be about, though, you know?
I enjoyed that reboot, by the way.
Yeah.
I actually did enjoy the reboot.
I'm one of the few that have Halloween the remake as my number one and Friday the 13th remake as my number one of the franchise. I'm sorry to say, but that's a good average,
one for two. Yeah. It's all good. Oh, no.
I thought Michael Bay was going to be in that behind the sequel to that, but I guess.
It just lapsed too much.
Yeah, they let it wrap. It's the same thing with the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, which that one we didn't really get to. I actually have as my fourth best of the franchise. It's not as bad. It's not even close to what Freddy's Dead or. Nightmare on Elm Street 2. And Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is the most, I would say, the most interesting of the franchise. Because
It's the most interesting segment on the anthology series DVD when they talk about that.
The producers did not know. Oh, we didn't know this was going
to. Man, today with 2018 goggles, you watched part two. It's like, wow. Uh-huh. I mean, it's wild to the point where like they were accidentally progressive in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's so funny, and it's weird because actually I think Christian Slater and Brad Pitt were up for the role.
And they
picked Mark Patton.
Wow.
And
that worked out well. Yeah. That was a good shot.
I mean, it worked out so well that Mark Patton decided to sue him 30 years later. You know what I mean?
And there's a documentary coming out
that he produced about it.
And still that dancing scene. What was that? Like they were trying to do it based off another movie that did something like that.
Probably Footloose.
But then again, when I watch, I think Wes
Craven kind of spoke to it. He's like, there was a moment in the movie where Freddy is in the real world.
Yeah.
And it's like you completely ruined the character at that point. He's a person that only exists in your dreams. Yeah. So once you take him in the real world,
but in
he could be hurt.
And the way it wasn't really progressive because it was a way that because Freddy was his gay side trying to come out.
Well, yeah, they were. Yeah,
and that's how they put it.
Really. Yeah, yeah. And in the way
they make that.
In the way he was survived by a heterosexual moment. By his girlfriend kissing him.
Yeah, I
saving
guess
him
I
from.
That.
So that's kind of like, in a way, it's trying to be progressive, but then it's trying to be.
Can you imagine trying to tell somebody about that movie? Describing it, how fucking horrible it sounds.
I vividly remember seeing that movie in the theater, and at that time, nobody spoke about any kind of gay undertones at all.
But then when you watch it now,
accepted it for what it was. Yeah. So yeah, now it's just completely clear.
Mark and his friend fucking around on the baseball field and taking his pants off. This is getting real.
Well, yeah, there's moments in the movie where his girlfriend is trying to console him, but he runs away from her and goes to visit his best friend.
And that's one of the best looking things where Freddy's coming outside of his body.
Cool. The visual effects, the special effects back then.
Yeah.
All latex.
But man, that was.
I liked it, though. I liked the latex. The CGI shit, when you think about that,
that's one of the most interesting films, and I gotta put that higher on my list because it's so different. And
I think it was part where he actually is screaming, and you see Freddy's eye in his mouth or something.
Looking down.
I think that was someone's girlfriend that was did that scene or something. Yeah. I believe.
But that's just a good visual effect. That was just awesome.
But Freddy's at least it's more interesting and it's entertaining compared to like Freddy's Dead, which is just boring. You have John Doe. You have a character named John Doe.
Well, Freddy's Dead is like, unfortunately, when you're crossing the decade mark, you're going like from 89 to 90, and you're dealing with technology kind of coming into play. They try to incorporate that in the movie, and it just makes it just a disjointed movie. It just doesn't flow with the same tone as 4, 5, and 6 that came before it. It's just all of a sudden it's this different kind of movie.
Yeah.
It's
just, the best thing in the film for me it was the map that said you're fucked.
Oh yeah,
the best thing.
Yeah,
the deaths weren't even like interesting. Like
there are some moments like when Freddie says, "Every town has an Elm Street." I remember that was a dope line because it's true. Every town does have an Elm Street. So if I'm breaking out of Springfield and I want to kill kids all across the country, yeah, that's my excuse. It's like every town's an Elm Street, and I can just haunt the dreams.
And then they had the random cameos from Tom Arnold and Roseanne.
Yeah, that's
such a weird.
Yeah.
Of all the cameos you get those two.
So they
get
four.
And that goes to the popular.
I think the franchise got so popular at that point where
you start incorporating stars like that, and it kind of ruined it. Yeah.
I want to thank the fellas for coming through again.
Indeed. Of course.
And we're gonna try to keep this going. And try to make something of it. So thanks again, guys. Appreciate the time and all that.
Appreciate it, Mike.
All right.
Appreciate it as well.
All right.
Thank you.
Signing out.